Time for I've Been Thinking. Phil O'Reilly, would you like to take it away?
Thank you. I've been thinking that because of Anzac Day, I was thinking about history, and I, as you know, I love history, and I was thinking about how our understanding of historical events changes over time, and when we were, when those Anzac ceremonies first started, soon after the First World War, they were very, very different to how they are today, and you see people react to them in different ways. So, for example, the vandalism done to a number of the memorials over the last few weeks, I'd no idea what those people were thinking. I disagree with them, but obviously that's a reaction. It's a modern one, and the reactions that you had to the Palestinian protesters and some of the protesters around Gaza and the Palestine and in Wellington on the weekend and elsewhere. So this historical event becomes a thing for modern people to engage with. And part of me, I don't like people protesting in that way, but part of me likes that. I think we need to keep history kind of alive. But it's a strange thing, history. There's that great saying that history, people think that history is a set of black and white facts surrounded by grey opinions, when it's in fact exactly the opposite. Mm. And even today, there's an awful lot we don't know about Gallipoli and what happened there and who made the decisions and how they did. And the other thing I was just reading about as I was reading about Gallipoli, which I thought you'd be interested in and your listeners would be, that about the time in 1915 when our troops came across the beach at Gallipoli, there was a massacre of Armenians that started soon after that, not far away from Gallipoli actually, that what became the Turkish state murdered over a million Armenians, as a matter of fact, in the two-year period after that. And it was such a heinous crime that humankind had to come up with a new word to describe it, and they came up with the word genocide, and it was the first genocide. And we never learn about that in school, do we? It's extraordinary how history works, that we learn about this particular thing, not the other thing, but our understanding of that changes over time, and quite significant events kind of fade into the distance for us to forget. So I just love history in that sense.
Very good.
And Anzac's always the thing that brings it all back to me to say,
I've been thinking. Basically, it's not set in stone. Actually, history is alive.
No, it's absolutely.
And it keeps evolving. And on that, Phil, I had the same reaction about 10 years ago when I read a book about the Armenian genocide.
Yeah.
And I never knew about it.
Exactly.
And I had to. I actually looked it up on the US Holocaust Memorial Museum. They've got a very good overview of it.
Yep.
Did this happen?
It's extraordinary, isn't it? Extraordinary.
It's quite a story. Yep. Thank
amazing.
You very much, Phil O'Reilly. There, I've been thinking. Kirsty Cameron, I've been thinking.
I've been thinking. Well, first of all, fantastic for that, Phil. Thank you. That was interesting. I need to read more on the Armenian genocide. I spent a lot of yesterday watching Whakaata Māori, and what a fantastic job they do on Anzac Day.
Yeah.
Monty Sutar turns up several times because obviously they're repeating documentaries and things, but that was highly
recommended.
Well, much
of our military history is Māori history, isn't it?
It is. And we covered some of this in The Listener. We did a special Anzac issue because, like you, I'll read anything on it, and I figure if I'm interested, then other people will be too. But I've been thinking, to get back to Wallace playing Pete Cetera.
Good, eh?
I've actually been thinking about New Zealand music this week and what a good week it's been. I think it's the 15th year of the Tate Music Awards. And this year it's actually it's been taken out by another female artist, which is because there's been more and more nominations. I think it's maybe in his second year the nominations were about 50-50, when it's just, I guess, the way it rolls out with releases. But it was, I mean, the classic record was Look Blue, Go Purple.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Dunedin.
More Dunedin sound. But the winner was Vera Allen for Ideal Home Noise, and the best indie debut was Juju Lips. Both fantastic women artists, and another one to really look out for and everyone should give a whirl this weekend if you want to play something great is Ernie Bell, Not Your Cupid, who I think quite a few people had picked, as possibly a winner of that as well. But I just thought it was it just feels like it's a really good moment, again, in New Zealand music. And things come in waves, and I think it's fantastic, all these great young women. I went and heard Ernie Bell live a few months ago, and I remember standing in the Winter Garden thinking, God, when I was in my early 20s, I just didn't see artists like this. The women were either singing vocals in band or maybe strumming a bass. There were people around like, Jenny Morris with the Crocodiles, but it was before her sort of solo career. But just to go out on a Friday night and see an amazing artist, you know,
awesome.
Developing full powers.
Good on you.
It was fantastic. Right.
Yeah. Great stuff. Cool, Kirsty, cool. Cameron, kia ora. Yeah. Thank you very much. All right, 20 to 7, we've had a lot of response to this. Here's just a couple before we get into our story with Phil O'Reilly and Kirsty Cameron. I am 77. I am still working casually at university where I was lecturing, but find it very, I find that I get tired doing just what I used to do till I retired at 69. I'm in excellent health and see that the level of tiredness as you get older is not recognised. We can do it, but we pay later. Peter says, I'm 68, working full-time, blessed with a job I love and can't imagine anything worse than retirement. I intend to follow the example of an esteemed colleague who finally retired at 80. When I previously worked in mental health in Christchurch, we had a consultant psychiatrist who was still doing locums at 82. So many responses. I simply asked you, if you are 65 and plus, are you still working? 2101. And on that, I know that many of you did enjoy that extra long weekend, linking Anzac Day with the weekend, but it turns out we do like to work. There's been a 10% increase in the number of years that Kiwis are staying in paid work since a mandatory retirement age was eliminated in 2000. The average age of retirement in New Zealand is 67. That is up from 61 20 years ago. With us, Jeff Pearman, MNZM and founder of Senior Entrepreneurs New Zealand. Jeff, welcome.
Yeah, good to be with you, Wallace.
That says it all, doesn't it? 67, no mandatory retirement age, universal pension, up from 61. It's quite extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's a trend, Wallace, that's happening around the world. The same thing's happening in Australia, is that the average age of retirement is moving up further. And I think there's probably a couple of things driving that, and we may want to get into a discussion about that. One is longevity. We're living longer, and we're tending to live healthier. So we've got this whole new life stage sitting in here, you know, around about 60, 70-ish age group. And I think the other thing that's driving it for some people is financial need, that they need to keep working for financial reasons. Whereas others, like myself, I'm well past that age, I'm doing it because I love the work I do.
And those two prongs really are really reflected in a lot of feedback we are getting on this. Here's just one more before I go to Kirsty. Still working in the supermarket. I'm 71. Single female, have a mortgage, will sell this 60-year-old house, buy a 70-square-metre house, start this process while I'm still working, then retire in 2 years, aim to be freehold. I'm yet to decide where to live. Kirsty.
I think there's a lot of people still approaching retirement with mortgages. Aren't we seeing, I think, pretty sure they listened to a story on this too, that it's the highest rate it's ever been of people getting to their mid-60s, still, which perhaps taps back into that financial reasons to keep working. So I think there's a whole lot of things that need to be rethought about retirement, aren't there? It's like where we live and, you know, obviously the raising the actual age of super has gone off the table politically. It's been sort of ruled out. But perhaps can you see a point when that will actually come in and be mandated?
Jeff?
I don't know about that. I think the discussion about access to age pension is being put to one side. I think the thing you're talking about, Kirsty, much more is needing to rethink what the stage of our life is about. And I'm a bit pedantic about it. I don't use the word retirement because I think it's got too many kind of negative connotations attached to it. And I tend to think about, you know, this is a different life stage. How do you want to live this part of your life? What's the contribution you need to make? Where's your income going to come from? And there are a whole different set of questions than focused on the thing that retirement used to be your right. It used to be your entitlement because you put in all these years of hard work.
Yes.
And now it's your turn. Now that's changing totally. Yeah. I think the other thing about housing, and you're right about the mortgages, the other thing about housing is that there's been a decline in home ownership amongst people at this life stage also. So more and more people are beholden to the rental market.
Yeah, and that's a market that's, you know, as we know, is fraught in retirement villages too, are predicated on people being able to buy into them, not necessarily rent.
Phil.
Yeah, Jeff, I agree with quite a lot of what you're saying here. I mean, I've always thought, in the last few years, I've thought that the idea that there's a retirement age at all is just a furphy. For all the reasons you outline, I mean, the point is that we are living longer. For some of us, myself included, I'm 60, but look no more than 40. I know you'll be surprised.
I can validate that. Yes. Actually,
it's my daily regimen.
Yeah.
But I mean, I fully intend to work past 70 because I can't imagine not doing that. You know, one of the stories I tell about aging is I met a guy once. The head of the Victorian in Australia, the Victorian Return Services League, the RSL, and I was dealing with him for reasons I won't bore you with, but he would turn up to me in a suit and would had a mind like a steel trap, this guy, just a mind like a steel trap, just incredibly big brain and just onto it. And he was 90, just extraordinary. So so my sense, but the other time, the other sort of thing that I hear about and I have a lot of sympathy for is if you're a manual labourer, and you've been doing that all your life, well, your body's broken by the time it's 60. You know, particularly if you've gone through these times where there's less health and safety stuff than we have today. So the idea of a 65-year retirement for me is wrong, and you should be able to hopefully retire or do less work or do different work, which is another way of putting it, at a time that better suits you. And what's the solution to all of that? Well, I think improved KiwiSaver. One of the debates we don't have is about increasing KiwiSaver. We've still got 3+3, is it? 3+ whatever it is in New Zealand. Australia's moving closer to 12s and 15s. You want to know better than I do?
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so why aren't we having that debate? I mean, when KiwiSaver came in, I was at Business New Zealand, I was suspicious of it because I thought it would simply change savings from one bucket to another. And some of that did occur. But boy, it had an impact on how we thought about retirement. And I've turned into a big advocate of it now. And I think we just need to move on with that because if you've got more savings, you're able to make better choices, including leaving work earlier.
Very good point, Jeff.
Yeah, and I think the point, you know, I'd say I don't use the retirement word, I use a different R word, and that's rebalancing. And my view is there comes a time when you want to rebalance the place of paid work in your life, and you'll know when that is. And I think that's probably what you're hearing back from some of your people texting in too, Wallace, is that people are making their own decisions about them. But the thing that amazes me is that often when I'm doing public speaking, I'll ask people running workshops, I say, true or false, New Zealand has a retirement age? And generally around about 40% of people still believe we have a retirement age. What I worry about there is that if we tell ourselves we've got a retirement age of 65, we will start thinking about that whole way of living that next part of our life. And employers in the current environment will be thinking, well, you know, they're coming up 65, they're going to get age pension, goodbye.
Right.
And that worries me, what's going on in the current environment, that the pressure will be on older workers to step aside when that's not necessarily what they want or need to do.
A couple more here, Jeff. Wallace, I'm 62, a builder, and have been working in the industry since the age of 16. I have had 3 hip replacements, 1 knee and a shoulder reconstruction. I love my job, but I can't go on too much longer. Please consider the manual labour that provides essential service to all the academics and office workers. Ngā mihi, Russell from Wooden Bits, says Russell. Jeff, fair point, isn't it?
Oh, it is a fair point. And you know, what I've done a lot of work with manual labourers, particularly in Australia, but also here in New Zealand, and say to them, you need to be sitting down in your early 50s and saying, how do I want to live this next part of my life? And where can I be working, and be thinking about what you maybe move to or change direction around that stage in life, rather than simply holding out until the body breaks down. So I think it's you know, there's a whole movement internationally around mid-career planning, and that's what I encourage people to do. Have a think mid-career about what that next stage is about, and is that what you want to be doing? Because there are other options.
What a great wake-up call. Nice to have you on, Jeff. I'm pleased we had you on. That's Jeff Pem, and their founder of Senior Entrepreneurs NZ. I really like that point, Phil, that you picked up on about the 3x3 minimum KiwiSaver. I had a bit of an epiphany when we talked about that on the panel about 3 weeks ago, because I didn't know that Australia, they had 11% minimum.
Yeah.
I literally could not believe it. So whereas we would have had about $300,000 on average over a life cycle, they have about 800K.
And just bear in mind, it's not a complete solution, because the same mortgage stress that's occurring in New Zealand with older people is occurring also in Australia too. So
So
it's not the only solution, but it's a big part of having a choice to be able to be made. Yeah.
And I think, if I'm correct, superannuation is means tested there too.
So it is a kind of, they are
moving towards making people what they call self-funded retirees.
Right. But it's, much better
it's just about having a choice. And the other part of this, which we haven't talked about, is the gender imbalance, what women go into retirement with versus men. Yep. So there's lots of areas to
Very good. Now, just a word on this. On a light note, Gen Z is apparently in danger of giving up table manners, like no phones at the table and open mouth eating. Is table etiquette still important? What do you insist on? Do napkins belong on the lap or tucked into your shirt? Because I've never known the correct way. Good manners, said this article, are more than a cudgel to beat those who don't get it, this article said. These rules are all based on the fundamental goal of doing right by other people. Some of your feedback on that. Suzanne says, if table napkin tucked in is good enough for Mr. Bean, then it's good enough for me. Suzanne, Mike and Levin says, a good restaurant will have wait staff who will offer to tuck napkins into your clothing, depending on the meal type. Another one here.
That's a hospital, isn't it?
I think you can manage your own napkins.
Napkins on knee, not tucked in. Totally do not tuck into the neck, says someone. Gross elbows, who cares, as long as it's not invading others' space. So around the panel on this, do you see, Kirsty, table etiquette as belonging in the past?
Oh, probably, but it still revolts me, people, you know, eating with their mouths open and holding forks like they're weapons. But then you see, I grew up in the at the table of one Chris Cameron of Howick, who we could set my father off by banging your spoon against your teeth. If you're eating ice cream or something at the end for dessert, if you turned your spoon around in your mouth and made it sort of tap on your teeth, my father would have apoplexy. Probably listening to
this
now.
Would he go off?
Oh,
really?
Yeah, he had been brought up by reasonably, you know, almost Victorian era parents about table manners and was very strict on them. And as a result, I mean, the spoons on teeth don't worry me at all, but to him it was, you know, capital punishment, turning your fork over on the way to the mouth to sort of, you know, flip it upside down. Yes. I mean, the rules, I mean, they were Byzantine, really.
Phil?
Well, my parents were, I still can't work this out, by the way. Do you start outside or do you start inside? Because I was told you started inside on the forks and knives and stuff. And many young people won't know what I'm just talking about. If you've actually got two knives, which one do you start? And see, I was told by my parents you started on the inside, which showed you just how common they were. And I guess there's a point too about, to me, this is about...
Where it comes from. I don't know, it's the outside in.
When I'm at ambassador's functions, I just watch the ambassador doing and I'll just copy that. Oh, thanks very much, Your Honour. Fantastic. So I think it's about respect. So firstly, if I'm in a dinner with some very serious sort of senior people like ambassadors or very senior business people or global people of one sort or another, I will be very formal and do the napkin thing and have all the glasses and blah, blah, blah. I won't go over the top about it because I think New Zealand needs to be a bit casual about that sort of thing. But that's about showing respect to others. It's the same with the way you dress and so on. And it's also, I think, it's a situational choice as well. So it's respect in the situation. And I mirror the person I'm with. If the person I'm with is having a burger and swearing, then I'll have a burger and swear.
Okay.
You know, so I think it's a situational thing.
At a diplomat's function, do you put your napkin, your white napkin, into your shirt up the top?
No, I don't. No, Wallace, no. You put it on your lap, buddy.
You sure?
That's what you
Okay, doing. All right.
I do notice some old men who are a bit overweight and a bit fat, present company, not a part of this, of course, do sometimes put it in their shirt. And it's because I think it sprays down their gut. And they need to sort that out.
All right, and finally... Finally, on Friday's panel with Kirsty Cameron and Phil O'Reilly, this story became an unexpectedly big story. In short, comedian Arj Barker was distracted by a mother with a noisy baby sitting at a 15-plus show, and he stopped the show and asked her to leave. But another comedian was praised for how she handled it. Jenny Tian said, "Is there a baby in here?" she asked of the audience. "I always knew with TikTok I had influence with the younger generation. I didn't know I'd be this young," and addressed the baby's parents directly. If, for any reason, you feel like you do have to leave and relieve your baby, I won't be offended. You do what you have to do, cool parents. So when I thought about babies and comedians, I knew who the nation had to turn to. And that is...
I'm still triggered by the dinner table talk that I was just listening to. I was at a family of five with two parents, seven of us. Any elbows on the table, whack, we got hit. Turned upside down to eat our peas, whack, we got hit. My older sister has had her face pushed into dinner for not eating properly. So I'm triggered. But let's talk about comedians.
Sorry about that.
listeners, this is a guy called Andrew Clay. He's a comedian. He's really often funny, and he's got sometimes.
I've been around, Wallace. That's what you're trying to say. Now, 34 years I've been doing it.
What did you make of how Arj Barker handled it?
Oh, listen, I'm going to, surprise, I'm going to take the comedian side on this. It's an R15. It's not fair. And to compare the other comedians, how she handled it better and all the rest of it, if you've ever seen Arj Barker, he's a semi kind of character. He doesn't banter with the crowd. He creates an atmosphere. He said he was in a beautiful theatre. Now, if you're playing a loud bar and it's all a bit of a S fight the whole way through, you don't care about whatever's going on, right? But if you've got this beautiful theatre and beautiful silence in between your jokes and you're having a baby disturb it, I understand him. And I understand it's unfair because either way, he was in a lose-lose situation. He carries on doing it. You are easily distracted. You are 100% focused. And I've got to be honest, anyone who's not a comedian isn't really qualified to say what it's like.
All right.
Sorry, they're not.
Okay, Andrew Kirsty, let's jump in.
Oh, I'm...
Well, except for Kirsty, she can obviously say whatever she wants. Yeah, of course.
Well, okay. Why take your baby? I mean, if it had been me, I guess, I would have given the baby a feed before I left home. You know, passed it very quickly to its father or my friend or nan, whoever was babysitting, and had a great night out with a mate at my favourite comedian.
I
always think of these things. It's like there's people who go to theatres and things with chronic coughs. Everyone else around you has paid good money for those seats and those tickets, and to be distracted from the show, whether it's the cough or the baby.
Phil. I mean, you're at a business lunch. And you're speaking.
Not too many babies there, mate.
Okay, fair enough. All right. Okay, you keep going.
Big babies with millions of dollars. That's what they are.
But actually, I often feel sorry for mums because I'm at a theatre or something like this and something really quite small happens. You know, a little blub from my baby. And all of a sudden, mum's getting up and rushing outside because she doesn't want to disturb everybody. So I'm with Kirsty on this that actually I feel sorry for mums. Actually, they've got to get up and take a little nipper off.
More relaxing. I just think it's the baby's not there.
I just think if you're going to go see a comedian, don't bring a baby.
I guess my thing, Andrew, is that, you know, you're a comedian. This is what you're paid for.
I'm paid to put on a performance. I'm not paid to babysit your baby. I don't understand. And the other thing is, it could have happened. The house staff also could be held to a fault here a little bit because they went, hey, you can come in, but you have to sit towards the back in case your baby plays up. Why they seated her near the front also defies a bit of logic to me, just quietly.
I don't get it, but you have hecklers, Andrew. You've got hecklers.
And you know what? They're not welcome either, Wallace.
is it okay if you laugh? Is it okay to have people laughing there? Is that
if
right?
If I say you're okay to laugh, you come up. No, and you know what? I probably would have gone with the flow because I'm a chatty comedian, one that interacts with the crowd, but Arj Barker is not. He shouldn't have to change his demeanour to deal with something that shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Okay.
But there is something worse than having a baby in the crowd. And that's having and this has happened to me, like a 10 or 12-year-old in the crowd. And you're going, you're kidding me, right? Oh, they've heard worse at home. You're fine. Carry on. No, I don't want to do my story about my sexual dysfunction in front of your 12-year-old daughter. I don't want to do that. Okay. Oh, no, she's heard it all before, mate. I don't care, mate. It's not okay. Get her out.
On that, before we go, 10 seconds, napkins. Do they belong on the lap or in your shirt?
Mate, unless I'm a mafia boss, I'm putting it on my lap.
Andrew Clay, gold. Thanks for being with us. And, hey, what a great show, both. Kirsty Cameron and Phil Ryan, thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
I'm Wallace Jammin. Stick around. I'm with you till 8. A bit of Piece of Terror to take you out.
book.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.